You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, November 17th. My name is Michael Brooks, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Alistair Crook is a former British intelligence operative, former advisor to the European Union on the Middle East and foreign policy. He's the head of the Conflicts Forum, which facilitates dialogue between Islamist movements and Western states. And he's going to explain to us how we can best understand ISIS, and that's through understanding Saudi Arabia. Plus, Louis Gohmert, he said something that's funny. Need a little levity. A elite British university disinvites a speaker who went to Syria to fight with the Kurds. Total insanity. We'll also talk about winning, whether President Obama wants us to be winning, or whatever other things these Republicans have cooked up about what he said at the G20 summit in Turkey. I'm sure they would never misinterpret anything that President Obama said, and I'm sure that they would always give a fair and accurate representation of his opinions to the world. Might have to touch on Sam Harris. I apologize, but I think it's important. And a whole lot more on today's show. You can start to take me down, new Matt. And we have a minute here, so how are you guys doing? How are you doing, new Matt?
It is a beautiful day out today. I'm ready to go.
Is it? Oh, I've never, you know, I actually noticed that today. You came in very, like, you're always pretty positive, but you had some sort of, like, crisp fall energy to you today. You seem, you're ready to go.
Yeah, well, if you remember, on Friday, we had the big Donald Trump thing, and then yesterday we had the debate and the terror attack. So busy days.
Very busy.
So not as much to get to today, thankfully. Wow. So we can just focus on what we need to get to.
All right, sounds good. Miss Kelly, Miss Classic Kelly,
I'm
at
feeling
the mic,
chipper and in a great mood as well.
Terrific. So I am as well, and I want to add to the positive energy by talking about today's sponsor. And that is Harry's.com. And Harry's is the official partner of Movember, of the Movember Foundation, and will be donating money and helping raise awareness for men's health this month. Do you guys, I mean, now we know about Movember because Sam's been talking about it. Harry's has been talking about it. So basically, you know, people have been asking me, what am I going to do for Movember this year? I go in and out. Sometimes I rock a full beard. I'm back to being clean shaven. But I know other people who are taking it really seriously. They got mustaches going on. They're doing a lot of things for Movember. The thing is, you can do whatever you want. And even if you're doing a mustache, you're still going to need a great shave. So Harry's, that's why Harry's is the official partner of Movember. And look, I love Harry's. These razors are the best. First of all, they're cheap. They're delivered to your door. Every single other razor you can imagine, they're so overpriced. You got to go in to like CVS or Duane Reade or something. They treat you like a shoplifter. They got to go there and like unlock this incredible, like, it's like, what am I doing? Am I in Mission Impossible? I just want a friggin' razor. Okay. And then either you pay like $30 for the quattro, watro, whatever the hell nonsense, overly complicated 50 blade Michigas. That thing is still rusted out and done in a couple of days. Okay. Or else you can get these totally cheap, totally like they're just not going to work. They're just going to hack your face up. Harry's is cheap. And another thing is those razors, they last for a while. You keep them clean. You take care of them. They'll keep you in good stead for a while. So they're cheaper and last longer. It's a no-brainer. It's the only thing I shave with. It's given me the best shave that I've ever had, incidentally. And basically, the way Harry started is it started with two guys who were passionate about creating a better shaving experience by delivering amazing shave at an affordable price to your door. And getting started couldn't be easier. And what you can do for this Movember month is you can get started with this amazing deal. With my code, Majority Report, you can get it for just $10, okay? That's unbelievable. The guys at Harry's bought a factory in Germany, which we've talked about before, that has been crafting some of the world's highest quality blades for almost a century. Matt, do you want to buy a factory in Germany? Is that one of your life goals?
I don't know if I'll ever have the capital enough to do it, but if I get the chance, yeah, definitely.
Factory in Germany, right? Harry's sells its product at a factory direct prices, so you only cost a fraction of the price of the big brands. Over a million guys have made the switch to Harry's. Website is streamlined and easy to use. It takes 30 seconds to place an order. And the set, this is what you get. You get a razor handle, three blade cartridges, and your choice of shaving cream or foaming shave gel delivered to your door. Shipping is free. Go to harrys.com now. And a special offer for fans of the Majority Report. Harry's will give you 50 off your first order with the code Majority Report. That's harrys.com. Enter code Majority Report and get those $5 off. It's Movember. It's time to support research at the Men's Health. And it's time to get an incredible shaving experience today with Harry's. We'll be right back with Alistair Crook. Demon can kill me. Kill me again. If you never kill me, I'll pray. Yes, I. And we say, Jehovah, life over death. Demon can't kill me again. We say, good over evil. Life over death. Satan can't kill me, Here comes the hot staper. Fire burning hotter than paper. That song you written proper than later. Protected from the crown of my head. Straight down to the very soul of the crepe, Me have a chat for them. Them send gunshot poison to your accident. Long time them a try like half my oxygen. But you're in control. Can't take me soul. Life over death, demon can't kill me again. Me say, good over evil. Life over death, demon can't kill me again. Them put poison in a liquor, try curse me. A good thing, me no drink, me no thirsty. From the day my mother birth me, Selassie, I hurt me, nobody can hurt me. Them disguise Jezebel in a the biggest way. Senna come to give me the biggest ace. Can it left her in dismay? A long time, them a try up until this day. Me say, Sorry about that, everybody. I'm not sure what's going on. Everything had been booked and good to go, but apparently not really. So I'm going to check my email and see if I get to if I hear from Alistair's assistant, and if so, I'll try to get him back on the phone. But if not, we'll just move forward with everything else. So let me get to a story. And I want to start with what do we have? Let's really briefly, let's go back to the debate that took place on Saturday with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley. This is one more important exchange that took place in that debate. This is basically they're talking about healthcare. Bernie Sanders is, of course, a proponent of single payer, Medicare for all, eliminating all of the nonsense. You know, we have a healthcare system that, as many people know, we spend more per capita than any other major industrialized country on healthcare, and yet we deliver the worst results consistently. And the reality is that in this case, to have a marketplace of insurance companies and HMOs and barriers to delivery that don't really perform any function other than sucking money out as middlemen has led to disastrous results. So the economic, the humanitarian, the obvious answer is to streamline the process, make Medicare available for everyone. There's a lot of different subtleties and ways, I'm sure, of how you implement it, but fundamentally we need universal national health care, and we need to catch up with the rest of the industrialized world. That's what Bernie Sanders is saying. While acknowledging that Obamacare has delivered some improvements, Hillary Clinton is essentially running on Obamacare. Watch how she frames this exchange with Bernie Sanders. Let's take a look.
Secretary Clinton, back in 1994, you said that momentum for a single-payer system would sweep the country. That sounds Sanders-esque, but you don't feel that way anymore. Why
not? The revolution never came. I waited, and I got the scars to show for it. We now have this great accomplishment known as the Affordable Care Act, and I don't think we should have to be defending it among Democrats. We ought to be working to improve it and prevent Republicans from both undermining it and even repealing it. I've looked at the legislation that Senator Sanders has proposed, and basically he does eliminate the Affordable Care Act, eliminates private insurance, eliminates Medicare, eliminates Medicaid, TRICARE, Children's Health Insurance Program, puts it all together in a big program which he then hands over to the states to administer. And I have to tell you, I would not want, if I lived in Iowa, Terry Branstad administering my health care. Democrats, we ought to proudly support the Affordable Care Act, improve it, and make it the model that we know it can be.
Well, let me just say something.
30 seconds.
We don't eliminate Medicare. We expand Medicare to all people. And we will not, under this proposal, have a situation that we have right now with the Affordable Care Act. We have states like South Carolina and many other Republican states that because of their right-wing political ideology are denying millions of people the expansion of Medicaid that we passed in the Affordable Care Act. Ultimately, we have got to say as a nation, Secretary Clinton, is health care a right of all people or is it not? I believe it is.
May I jump in?
So Bernie Sanders is exactly right that fundamentally this is a right, along with housing, along with many other things that you cannot reasonably say people have a legitimate shot at life with, frankly. That's the point, fundamentally, of these programs. But the argument she's making is incredibly disingenuous. She's saying basically like, oh, well, you're getting rid of all of these programs like child health care and this and that and Medicare even. When he's saying actually precisely the opposite, he's saying, no, we need to stop having a piecemeal system that works for some people, doesn't work for others, spends resources inefficiently, has misaligned priorities, and has failed consistently to deliver for many Americans, including ones that do have health insurance. That's what he's saying. So instead of acknowledging the reality, he's saying, look, make it all one system that works. And then, of course, there's going to be different aspects of state discretion. She then goes and loops and says, well, the governor of Iowa, who is a Republican, very, very right-wing Republican, I don't want Terry Branstad administering my health care. This is sort of the parallel track to the cheap line about paying for Donald Trump's kids' college tuition. It's the same thing. It's very calculated. It's going to get an applause at a Democratic audience in Iowa, and it's going to completely obfuscate the point, which is that as long as we're playing this game with insurance companies, with HMOs, with parasitic middlemen, there is going to be a lower quality of delivery for most people. We're going to continue to have worse outcomes, and we're going to continue to have misaligned priorities. The only way to fundamentally solve this problem is to do what Bernie Sanders is doing. And I don't know what revolution she expected to happen in the early 90s either. I mean, look, Hillary Clinton has done some good work on healthcare. And if Clinton had passed his healthcare bill, America would be in better shape. She was a major part of designing that. But that wasn't a universal national single-payer proposal either. It was probably a bit to the left of Obamacare, but it was not a single-payer proposal. So, and in fact, it was similar in the sense that it was a very convoluted hybrid proposal, which is difficult to sell to the American people and is easily demagogued. Bernie Sanders is just doing the simple, straightforward proposal. Make it a single-payer system. Give everybody easy, direct access to healthcare. And any legitimate progressive Democrat should support that unreservedly. It's absolutely obvious. I am really sorry about this. I have no idea. Maybe Alistair Crook is involved with some secret negotiations right now that is making him unavailable. What I'll do is maybe get to one more story, and then I'll give him one more shot. But that is the number. So I'm not hearing back from his assistant right now. So I really do apologize about that. And if I don't get him soon, we'll just go into the fun half a little bit more quickly, and we'll take is anybody named Alistair that listens to the show? Let me call in. We could at least get something. That's really fundamentally why I booked him. I'm a little bit of an Anglophile, man.
I felt like,
yeah,
when I saw his name, I felt like it was going to be good. Alistair. I was like, this is going to be a real contribution to the show. I have no idea who he is, what he does. This sounds great.
I know it's getting even more it's more sad when you put it that way. I remember the only other time anything like this happened. I remember I was having Mark Ames on once. Mark Ames is a great guest. I've had him on a bunch of times. He writes at Pando. Does amazing coverage of corporations, civil liberties, Silicon Valley. And it was a similar type of thing where I called and he just wasn't there. And he didn't respond to any emails. And then 15, 20 minutes into the show, I see this call on Google Hangout. And I go to the break and I pick up and Ames is just like, dude, sorry, man. And then we went right to it. I don't even remember what the issue was, but that was nice. I doubt that even if I do get Alistair on the phone, which I think at this point is very unlikely, I doubt that Alistair Crook is going to say, dude. So let me actually try to do this interview that, you know, obviously it's not going to be as remotely as valuable, unfortunately, not having him on the phone. But let me sort of run down what his arguments are. And we've talked about this on the show before. There's a couple of different threads that Alistair Crook has worked on for at least a decade. I think he left government service, I think, in 2004 or 2003. He did work in Northern Ireland and he did work in Israel-Palestine, negotiating ceasefires, negotiating peace agreements. And he sort of has a twofold argument that you're seeing actually play out right now, almost like he called it pretty uncannily. So his argument is that, look, there is this Islamic revival, this Islamist political revival. And there's two tracks to it. One track is the Saudi track, and it is a Salafist Wahhabi track. And this is why he says, look, you cannot understand ISIS without understanding Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is where Wahhabism arose and came to power. The power base of Saudi Arabia is an alignment of the House of Saud, the Saudi royal family, and Wahhabist religious clerics and religious establishment. Now, Wahhabism is one of the most fundamentalist, fanatical, conservative, and rigid versions of Islam imaginable. And like many versions that are extreme in any religion, it's pretty modern. This is a couple hundred years old, and it was a revivalist impulse to bring purity back to Islam, quote unquote purity back to Islam. So Saudi Arabia has had this uneasy arrangement between a very powerful and very shrewd Saudi royal family that has enjoyed obviously contradictory and convoluted, but positive relations with the United States and the West, built on an alliance around oil, which, you know, many people can read about the account of Roosevelt visiting the Gulf on his ship, and the king at the time, the king of Saudi Arabia, coming and visiting Roosevelt with his sort of entire royal court with him, and them building and signing an agreement concerning oil during World War II. It's a fascinating history. Fast forward to the 80s. These groups that were funded by Saudi Arabia and filtered through Pakistan were obviously a major part of the Mujahideen, which was fighting a war against Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. And incidentally, this is a very legitimate activity for the Afghans. Let's not forget that. Regardless of the fallout of it, the Soviet Union was a brutal occupying force, just like we were a brutal occupying force in Vietnam. We saw a similar opportunity to do what the Soviets and what Vietnam had done to us to do to the Soviets. So we supported the Mujahideen, and the Saudis and the Pakistanis tended to support the most fanatical elements of the Mujahideen. Again, this is very out of keeping with traditional Afghan Islam, which is quite tolerant, relaxed, not this sort of Wahhabi thing. So on one hand, you have this very limited, very literalist Wahhabism, which for a long time the United States did not see as any problem. They saw it as, look, essentially, these guys are fighting communists. The Saudis give us oil. So what's the problem with conservative religious folk fighting our enemies and cutting oil deals with us? So that's one track. And even through all of the lessons that we've learned from Al-Qaeda and September 11th and the rise of ISIS, because all of these groups, even though Al-Qaeda and ISIS object to Saudi Arabia, this is where their ideology comes from. They're Wahhabists. They're Salafi and this narrow Sunni literalism. That's the ideological base. And they're just following the next logical steps. In other words, if you read the tweets even of top Saudi clerics, you're not going to see daylight that much, daylight between them and ISIS. And we know, and people have pointed out, that of course there's plenty of beheadings in Saudi Arabia and all the rest. Now, obviously, Saudi Arabia is not the same as ISIS, but ISIS is following and continuing and fulfilling a logic. So what Crook says is, first of all, in order to understand ISIS, you need to understand Saudi Arabia, because that's where the ideology comes from. Then step two is that we, in this Sunni part of this Islamist revival in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, we supported the Wahhabi section of it. Now, there's another contrasting Islamist revival, and that came from Iran and came from Hezbollah and influenced Hamas heavily in the Gaza Strip. And even though Hamas is a Sunni group, it's very influenced by the Shia Hezbollah in Iran. And Crook, who has definitely been accused of being very sympathetic to Iran and sympathetic to Hezbollah, I'm not sure I buy that entirely. I think that he's someone who doesn't, I think he's an operator and a diplomat and an intellectual and an intelligence person. And those, that worldview doesn't lend itself to any type of sort of easy moralizing. And I would include myself in that. I think I do a fair amount of easy moralizing. But his point is that that Islamic revival from the Shia tradition was much more intellectually rich. So if you studied any aspect of the Iranian revolution or even as Iran operates now, and anybody who has any passing understanding of Iran, you know that there are moderates like Rouhani, there are liberal reformers like Khatami, there are hardline far-right people like Ahmadinejad, and you know that Khamenei is to the right, the Ayatollah, the current Ayatollah is to the right, but he's playing all of these sides together. If you go into the literature of the Iranian revolution and the Iranian government, there are major intellectual conflicts in terms of how you interpret Sharia, how you govern, what is Islamic governance. In fact, even as the Iranian revolution was so hardline and so brutal and killed so many people and treats the Baha'is abysmally and has terrible record on women's rights and human rights, there's no doubt about all those things. I'm in no way minimizing that. But the very concept of an Islamic republic such as Iran is an entirely new invention and intellectual innovation in the concept in the Islamic tradition. So his argument is that we opposed and freaked out about Iran and Hezbollah because they weren't anti-communist in the same way as the Sunni Salafists and Wahhabis. They were anti-communist. They wanted to be neither East nor West. That was the slogan of the Iranian Revolution, a full independent course, which is somewhat reminiscent of the non-aligned movement, which was the countries in the developing world in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and it still exists today, but places like India and Indonesia and even Cuba actually participated. And the notion was that we don't want to be a vassal of either of these blocks. We want of either the Soviet Union or the United States. Iran aggressively articulated that. They said we want to be neither East nor West. And we want to think and govern Islamically, which I know for many people in this audience and many people in the West, what does that mean? That just means like, well, violate people's human rights and have a totalitarian religious order. And there's truth. There's absolute truth to that. But it also meant in Iran, it also meant recalibrating the relationship between individual and community. It also meant a new emphasis on social justice and delivery of health care and other essential services, which the Iranian government, by its own measures, has not lived up to. Their Gini coefficient is horrible, and inequality and crony capitalism are major problems there. But ideologically, they were talking about a lot more than just a conservative, doctrinal, limited version of Islam. They were talking about having open debate. There were female fighting squads. There were many roles for women in parliament. It's a much more contested and complicated tradition. And even though they've certainly, in all of these iterations, engaged in violence and engaged in atrocities, the goals are much more recognizable in the real world. So as an example, and this is really important, when you talk about a group like Hamas, have they engaged in obscene human rights violations and targeted civilians and not recently, but used to engage heavily in suicide bombing? Absolutely. And those are all crimes against humanity and wrong categorically. But the goals that they're engaged, their political objectives have overlap with real world things like occupation, like political goals. Right or wrong, they're not trying to restore a distorted 7th century fantasy of the world. That would be obscenely cruel. like you're seeing with ISIS. So you can condemn both of those groups, and you should, I do, but they're fundamentally different. And Hezbollah is different, and Iran is different. And you have a situation now where Crook was writing this stuff years ago, and in the context of Syria, on one hand, Iran is backing, along with Russia, Assad's government, which still has an incredibly high body count and is totally obscene in its human rights abuses. But at the same time, Hezbollah is protecting Christians in the context of this conflict. Iran is condemning the terror attacks in Paris as a crime against humanity. Because, again, the goals and the versions of these Islamist revivals are different. And Crook's argument is that because we were so obsessed with preserving the traditional power dynamics in the Middle East region and not taking accountability for our own record in Iran, which is obscene, we missed an opportunity for the one side of that ledger that we could potentially have a constructive engagement with that has a different intellectual worldview, that has some legitimate claims and arguments. We reacted against that, and then we dumped a whole bunch of money into what really is a one-dimensional, fundamentalist, metaphysical movement that is reaching its fullest logical conclusion in ISIS, which clearly is a humanitarian threat to the region, and now obviously is operationally humanitarian threat to the West. So functionally, with us fighting alongside Iran informally against ISIS, us recalibrating our relationship to Russia and Syria, because what Russia is doing in Syria, again, it's very brutal, but they're also making a statement about NATO's role in the Middle East and their role in the Middle East and these shifting power dynamics. A lot of things that he had predicted and has been articulating are coming to the fore now. So in order to really understand this, and again, we're not supporting or condoning or any of that, but we're drawing important distinctions, which is the way these situations get figured out, not by one-dimensional moralizing or by one-dimensional justifying. You know, on the other hand, ISIS has very functionally, could ISIS be what it is if we didn't invade Iraq? Very, 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 very unlikely. But to anybody who comes out and says, you know, ISIS is really about resisting the West because the West is imperialist and colonialist, it's bull. It's nonsense. It has nothing to do with it. ISIS is a imperialist, fascistic, cruel, serially human rights violating, obscene religious fanatic group. That's what it is. If we recalibrated all of our policies tomorrow, it would make no difference for them. But it might make a big difference for Hezbollah, and it might make a big difference for Hamas, and it certainly would make a big difference for the overall context in the region. So the answer is obviously some type of diplomatic process. The answer is some type of soothing of this Iranian-Saudi proxy war, which is the sort of underlying temperature heightener of the region. And it's in making these distinctions ourselves as observers so we don't fall into one-dimensional traps and we can really sort of gain a greater understanding of these issues. So, you know what? Minus a British accent, I kind of nailed that. I'm just playing. I hope that was valuable. I'm really sorry that we couldn't get Alistair Crook on the phone. I have no idea what happened. I still actually didn't hear back from him. So hopefully everything's okay on his end. We're going to go to the fun half of the program. And you should support this show because, you know, even with a guest not showing up, you still got some value. You still learned a little Iran, a little Saudi, a little Salafi, a little Hezbollah. I got you. That's how this show exists. That's how this show is possible. You can support us for less than a cup of coffee a day. Go to Majority Report. majority.fm/become a member. If you use Amazon, give us a kickback. Use our link on our website or go to Majority Report. What is it? I think it's Majority Report Kickback. Is that what it is? Majority Report/kickback.
I'm not sure, but if you go on to majority.fm and/report, you should see the Amazon link there.
Yes. Yes. The Amazon link is there. Give us a review on iTunes. That helps us move up in the rankings. And we're going to be sending, we're testing out different days to send email blasts. But on the next email blast, what we're going to ask for is, even if you're a member of this show, subscribe to us on iTunes anyways, because that helps move us up the rankings and we get in front of more eyeballs that way. There's a lot of you that are members. All of you should be members, but you get the feed outside of iTunes. But if you subscribe to iTunes too, it doesn't affect the delivery of the show to you, the unedited members show, in any way, but it helps move us up the rankings, which exposes us to more people. Also, writing a review helps a lot as well. Of course, you should write a review emphasizing me. Those are the best reviews to write. And some shout outs for new Matt. I was going to say Classic Kelly too, but she just shook her head at me. So whatever.
Yeah, I'll take your shout outs.
Okay. Okay. Classic Kelly will take shout outs as well. There's something really weird about reacting to facial expressions that other people can't see. Okay. What else can you do? Fair trade. Justcoffee.coop. Get the Majority Report blend. Help workers. Help the environment. Help us. I was walking by a Starbucks the other day, and this woman was handing out leaflets about Starbucks. And I was like, you know what? I don't even need to read this. I got it. I buy it. I'm sure Starbucks is terrible. I have no doubt. So support us. Become a member. We'll see you on the flip side. Oh, and if there, hopefully there's not a problem with the phones, you can join us at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. See you on the flip side. Searching up the page.